Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 17th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Judge Denies Motion to Dismiss Suit. Federal lawsuit filed by mostly ex-employees of Midland Christian will move forward. By Ben Schaffer. A federal judge denied the City of Midland's motion to dismiss a federal lawsuit filed by four former and one current Midland Christian School employee. Judge Barbara Lynn made the decision on the lawsuit Tuesday at the Western Texas District Court inside the George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush United States Courthouse in downtown Midland. The lawsuit was filed against the City of Midland, the Midland Police Department, Detective Jenny Alonzo, Sergeant Rosemary Sharp, and Officer Camilo Fonseca. In mid-February 2022, Jared Lee, Gregory McClendon, Barry Russell, Matthew Counts, and Dana Ellis were charged with failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse, stemming from an incident involving two students rumored to be involved in a sexual assault on Midland Christian's campus. But the school's own investigation determined there was nothing more than roughhousing or horseplay in a locker room. In May of last year, the five Midland Christian staff members were no-billed or not indicted by a Midland County grand jury. Last August, the five Midland Christian employees filed a civil rights lawsuit against the City of Midland, Midland Police Department, and specific individuals within the police department. Counsel for the former Midland Christian employees wrote in their original complaint that, quote, the false and malicious allegations against these career educators have profoundly disrupted their lives, irreversibly damaged their reputations, and caused severe and ongoing emotional distress and trauma, unquote. The City of Midland filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit in the United States Court for the Western District of Texas in October. In their motion to dismiss, lawyers for the defense wrote, the city cannot be liable because no plaintiff was denied a protected right. Plaintiffs do not allege facts which plausibly show an actionable city policy. Plaintiffs do not allege facts which show that the city's policymaker is culpable. Plaintiffs do not allege facts which show that the city's policymaker was the moving force that directly caused any deprivation of a plaintiff's rights. Plaintiffs fail to allege facts which overcome any defendant officer's qualified immunity. On Tuesday, Lynn denied the motion to dismiss made by the city, and the civil case will move forward. This article is entitled, Buffett Buys Another $127 Million Worth of Occidental Stock, by Josh Funk, AP Business Writer. Omaha, Nebraska. Investor Warren Buffett's company bought another $127 million worth of Occidental Petroleum stock over the past week to give Berkshire Hathaway 213.9 million shares of the oil producer. Berkshire's latest filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission late Monday showed that it had bought another 2.2 million Occidental shares. Buffett's Omaha, Nebraska-based conglomerate controls 23.8% of Occidental stock and holds warrants to buy another 83.9 million shares for $59.62 apiece. But the billionaire recently told shareholders that he has no plans to buy the entire company. Many people like to copy Buffett's moves because of his remarkable track record. Buffett doesn't routinely comment on Berkshire's stock purchases. Buffett has been regularly buying Houston-based Occidental shares since early last year, whenever the stock drops below $60. Berkshire's latest purchases were made at prices between $56.34 and $58.52. Occidental's shares were down slightly Tuesday morning at $58.23, so Berkshire's warrants remain out of the money. Berkshire also holds 93,532 preferred shares of Occidental that are worth about $10.3 billion and carry a hefty dividend. But Occidental recently redeemed 6,468 of them for $110,000 apiece. Berkshire picked up those preferred shares and the warrants when it helped finance Occidental's purchase of Anadarko in 2019. In addition to investments, Berkshire owns dozens of companies outright, including BNSF Railroad, Geico Insurance, several major utilities, and an eclectic assortment of other companies such as See's Candy, Helzberg Diamonds, and Precision Cast Parts. This article is entitled City of Midland, Plans for Hogan Park Walking Trail Continue by Stuart Doreen. City of Midland officials told the Parks and Recreation Committee on Tuesday that plans are moving forward on improvements at Hogan Park. Officials said there are plans in place and money has been allocated for a walking trail at the regional park in Northeast Midland. Residents also can expect city officials to move the dog park further east and south from its current location. Lastly, officials said that the covered basketball court was part of the city's original plan for the park and would inevitably be completed. City leaders have repeatedly said that improvements would take place at Hogan, even if the deal with the Permian Basin Quality of Life Conservancy was voted down. The Conservancy promised to raise up to $30 million in private funding for Hogan Park. City officials had dedicated $10 million to improvements, and some of that total went to upgrades at the Bill Williams softball complex. City officials now have their sights set on the walking trail and dog park relocation. Endeavor Making an Impact. The City of Midland's Lori Williams and Christina Burns told committee members Endeavor Energy is in the midst of volunteer effort to help the City of Midland Community Services Department. More than 270 volunteers are helping with animal services, city pools, and parks this week. That help includes painting at the Scarborough Sports Complex, planting at parks, helping with the dogs and cats at the Midland Animal Shelter, and helping get the pools ready for the summer. Upcoming events. The Parks and Recreation Committee heard details about events coming up, including Movies in the Park will start Thursday, not Friday as previously reported. The City of Midland found out about another large downtown event on Friday and decided to move movie night this week to Thursday at Centennial Park. The second Movie in the Park will take place June 2nd at Astound Broadband Stadium. Pools and splash pads across the city will open May 28th. Pitch, Hit, and Run is set for Bill Williams Complex. The date is still to be determined. The next Park and Recreation Committee meeting will be on July 18th at 11:30 a.m. at the White House at Washington Park. This article is entitled Demolition of Bridge at Midkiff Road, I-20 to Begin by Mercedes Cordero. South Midland residents will soon need to find alternative routes to get across Interstate 20. The Texas Department of Transportation reported that the demolition of the existing Midkiff Road Bridge at Interstate 20 is expected to begin May 31st. Shortly thereafter, the Cotton Flat Road Bridge will also be demolished. The roadway leading up to the bridge going over I-20 will be closed on May 30th. Once the bridges are closed, both Midkiff Road and Cotton Flat Road will be unavailable for north-south travel across I-20, TxDOT said. Traffic will be pushed to Loop 250, Antelope Trail, and State Highway 349 as alternative routes. Commuters should expect longer than normal travel time on these north-south roadways, TxDOT said. Midkiff Road is expected to reopen in early spring of 2024. Cotton Flat Road will reopen shortly after in spring 2024. Business 20 will provide an alternate east-west connection between State Highway 349 and Loop 250 north of I-20, and County Road 140 will provide an alternate east-west connection south of the interstate. Drivers also will have noticed that the bridge at County Road 1250 is taking place. That bridge is expected to open in the summer of 2023, providing an additional east-west connection from County Road 1250 to Loop 250 along Choya Road. Pooley's Construction was awarded the County Road 1250 bridge project with a bid of approximately $59.1 million. James Construction was awarded the Midkiff Bridge project with a bid of approximately $36.3 million. FNF Construction was awarded the Cotton Flat Bridge project with a bid of approximately $68.5 million. When completed, the overpasses will provide commuters with a safer and more efficient I-20 corridor, TxDOT said. This article is entitled IEA, Oil Demand to Rise More Than Expected, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Global oil demand will climb more strongly than previously estimated this year as a post-pandemic rebound in China beats expectations, the International Energy Agency said. World fuel consumption will increase by 2.2 million barrels a day in 2023, about 200,000 a day more than forecast before, to a record 102 million, as China's demand hits an all-time high after scrapping anti-COVID restrictions, the IEA said in its monthly report. The Chinese recovery has been faster and stronger than expected, and in March, Chinese demand reached an all-time high. Toril Bassoni, head of the agency's oil market division, said in a Bloomberg television interview, "We're seeing really strong demand, especially in Asia." As demand accelerates and the OPEC Plus alliance, led by Saudi Arabia, curbs supplies, global oil markets remain on track to tighten sharply in the second half of this year, the agency predicts. That could give a renewed boost to crude prices, which have steadied near $75 a barrel in London after shedding all the earlier gains from OPEC's cutbacks amid fears over a recession. Last month, the IEA warned that rallying prices may worsen the siege on consumers squeezed by elevated inflation. Economic risks. Chinese fuel consumption hit 16 million barrels a day in March, according to the Paris-based agency that advises major economies. Beijing's latest economic indicators may have faltered, but the vast majority of the projected demand recovery is already in train. Official Chinese data on Tuesday showed industrial output, retail sales, and fixed investment grew at a much slower pace than expected in April. The unemployment rate for young people to a record high of 20.4%, a sign that the post-pandemic recovery isn't strong enough to absorb the millions of new entrants into the labor market. While the agency's report emphasized the strength of the recovery, it also acknowledged these lingering risks. The IEA noted a gloomier outlook for the wider economy that's being worsened by a slump in manufacturing and subdued global trade, with the projected boost from China remaining elusive. The economic picture has deteriorated, said Bossoni. Interest rates remain high and rising. Inflation is running high, and there is concern we're going into contraction in many areas. The agency's stronger estimate for demand growth in 2023 stems in part from historical downgrades for the previous 2 years. These baseline changes focus on emerging economies, including China. So even though Beijing is driving this year's growth, its total consumption is lower than estimated last month. Nonetheless, the IEA projects that global oil markets will still tip into deficit this summer, causing inventories to deplete at a rapid clip of 2 million barrels a day in the second half of the year. OPEC cuts. Much of the tightening will be caused by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners, as key members embark this month on a new round of production curbs, which the IEA has criticized for threatening to inflame prices. Output from the alliance will drop by 850,000 barrels a day between April and December, the agency predicts. The policy has revived tensions between OPEC and the IEA, institutions that respectively represent energy producers and consumers, with each side warning that the other should be careful in its prescriptions. OPEC Plus meets to review its production strategy on June 4th. Ironically, some supply relief is being provided by OPEC Plus member Russia, which has sustained exports despite a pledge to slash sales in retaliation for Western sanctions over its war on Ukraine. Russian shipments of crude and refined oils reached a post-invasion high of 8.3 million barrels a day in April, while export revenues swelled by $1.7 billion to $15 billion, according to the agency. This article is entitled Midland ISD Picks Its New Principal of Legacy High School by Stuart Doreen. A former bulldog is set to take over at Legacy High School. The Midland ISD board approved the hiring of Mish Etzel on Monday as the new principal of Legacy. Etzel graduated from Midland High, according to her presentation at the school board meeting on Monday. She also previously worked at Midland Freshman High School, according to the district. Etzel is currently working as the principal of Columbus High School in the Texas city of Columbus, which is around 70 miles directly west of Houston. Columbus is a Class 3A school. According to information from the Columbus High School website, the 2022-23 school year was her 20th year as an educator. She had spent 13 years as a teacher, coach, department chair, and educational consultant. This school year appeared to be her 7th as an administrator, having previously spent 4 years as an assistant principal and 2 years as a junior high principal. Every role has led me to this, my dream job, Etzel wrote on her welcome letter on the Columbus High School website. Etzel replaces current Legacy High School principal Shannon Torres, who will be Midland ISD's next executive director of school leadership. This article is entitled Midland ISD Superintendent Addresses Hiring of ECISD Talent by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard wants to build a team of successful educators with an understanding of West Texas. On Monday, the Midland ISD board approved more of her hires for top positions in her administration. Again, Howard rated Ector County ISD, a district she knows so well, for talent. The hires included Loz Melendez as the next executive director of bilingual ESL, Courtney Smith as the new chief of facilities and operations, and Linda Rhodes as the executive director of special services. The three hirings brings the number of current or former ECISD officials joining Howard in Midland to at least 10. we are working to retain and recruit a team of leaders in Midland ISD who want to be in Midland and West Texas, who understand the area and the customer service expected, who have proven track records in their areas of leadership, are willing to put in whatever amount of time is needed to move the district forward, and leaders who can lead at high levels and have a commitment to excellence, Howard wrote in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Howard, who herself had two stints at ECISD, has hired at least six to help fill her cabinet. They include Robert Sadio, Midland ISD's new deputy superintendent, Ashley Osborne, MISD's new associate superintendent for teaching and learning, Chad Krausen, Midland ISD's new general counsel, Fatima Muniz, MISD's new executive director of technology, Jesse Garcia, MISD's new executive director of talent acquisition and development, Brandon Reyes, Midland's new human capital management. I have had the opportunity to work with many great people over the last 29 years, and most in this region, Howard wrote. I worked in ECISD on two different occasions the past 10 years. I had the opportunity to build relationships with these leaders. I know what they can do and how they lead, and know what they will bring to the team. I am confident in the abilities of the leaders we have hired, and look forward to them joining Team Midland ISD. Melendez is currently a bilingual coordinator at ECISD. She comes to Midland with 13 years of experience, according to Midland ISD. Rhodes brings more than 20 years of experience into her role, according to MISD. Among other roles, she has served as a teacher, educational diagnostician, and special education behavior supervisor. She currently serves as the Director of Choice and Partnership Schools at ECISD. Smith comes to Midland from ECISD, where he currently serves as the Executive Director of District Operations. He has also served as Custodial Director, Energy Management Specialist, as well as a teacher and golf coach. Smith has nearly 20 years of experience in education. Midland ISD also hired Annette Macias as Executive Director of Accountability, Evaluation, and Compliance. MISD reported that Macias stays in MISD, transitioning from her role as Executive Director of State and Federal Programs. She has 27 years of experience as a teacher and administrator. Howard also mentioned those that the current administration has recruited from within, with the recent promotions of Tricia Terran, Shannon Torres, and Melissa Horner. This article is entitled MPD Search for Suspects Who Looted Coin-Operated Vacuums by Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Midland Police Department is seeking information on two car wash burglary suspects. On May 3rd, two suspects were captured on surveillance, burglarizing coin-operated vacuums at the Solutions Auto Wash, located at 3205 Caldera Boulevard. The suspects were driving a black 2006 Chevrolet HHR with license plate HJP7075. The license plate on the vehicle returns to an empty lot in Odessa, and the registered owner doesn't match the suspect descriptions, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. If a person is the first to submit any information on the suspects or the vehicle, and it leads to an arrest, he or she will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 230-503-011. This article is entitled Natural Gas Services Reports Profit by the Associated Press. Midland. Natural Gas Services Group, Inc., NGS, on Monday reported profit of $370,000 in its first quarter. On a per-share basis, the Midland, Texas-based company said it had net income of 3 cents. The maker of natural gas compression equipment and industrial flare systems posted revenue of $26.6 million in the period. Dawson registers loss. Meanwhile, Dawson Geophysical Company, DWSN, on Monday reported a loss of $413,000 in its first quarter. The Midland, Texas-based company said it had a loss of 2 cents per share. The provider of onshore seismic data services for the oil and gas industry posted revenue of $29.4 million in the period. This article is entitled "Relentless Optimization Keeps CrownQuest on Its Path." Company focused on the Midland Basin with its 93,000-acre footprint. By Mella McEwen. Crude and natural gas prices may rise and fall, but CrownQuest Operating doesn't intend to be influenced by price levels. We try to keep steady to our plan and to plan successfully at a wide range of prices, said Ken Beattie, CrownQuest's chief operating officer, as he awaited the start of a reception honoring the company, hosted by the Midland Wildcat Committee. CrownQuest's plan has consistently been to drill 140 to 150 wells a year, he said. It's a great development pace for our acreage footprint and lets us grow production a little bit. It will keep us active a decade or two. The company is incredibly blessed to operate in the Permian, he said, and fortunate to have an acreage portfolio that lets it continue to be as efficient as possible. Beattie said, before the pandemic, CrownQuest was operating 7 rigs in the Midland Basin, but now runs 5 rigs after finding it was more efficient, and the 5 rigs could still drill the same number of wells. The cost environment is currently challenging, he said, and in fact are higher than the price of oil, he said, adding that such things have a way of working themselves out. The cost environment is higher than you would expect in this price environment, he said. Oil field tubular costs are especially high, but that's outside the control of oil and gas. Steel is a global commodity. CrownQuest is focused on the Midland Basin with its 93,000-acre footprint. We're in the position where it's hard to justify expanding into a new basin or even our existing footprint. We have a good inventory, good acreage. It's about operating within the position we have. We focus on what we can control. We call it relentless optimization, Beattie said. He said the company was ahead of the crowd in implementing dense drilling pads 4 or 5 years ago. Implementing dense drilling on spacing units, 15, 20, or in some cases 25 wells in one project. That makes the overall costs more efficient, he explained. Seismic sensitivity has prompted the company to use a higher percentage of recycled water, and when produced water must be injected, Beattie said, CrownQuest looks for opportunities to inject into the shallower San Andres, moving away from the deeper Ellenberger formation. The company also never schedules flares, and was at the forefront of the American Petroleum Institute's environmental partnership by putting together a system to monitor for emission leaks that Beattie called oversized for its footprint. Looking at a program this large, it's one problem to solve after another. That's what makes the industry fun. It's what makes the industry a challenge, Beattie said. This article is called Small Bites. It is entitled Little Bohemian Opens Downtown by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The French-inspired restaurant that took over the Low Street Books location on Wall Street now welcomes Midlanders near and far to come in and try dishes from the varied food and cocktail menus. Little Bohemian, owned by local Caitlin Carrasco, opened to the public Monday evening after a couple of invitation-only private soft launches. Carrasco told the Reporter Telegram back in January that operation hours would be 11 a.m. to midnight, 1 a.m., Monday through Saturday. Opening night hours ran 5 to 10 p.m., so expect different times while the crew gets acclimated to public crowds. The address is 201 West Wall Street, Suite 201. Hot Bites. Even though I know an appetizer will fill me up, I can't deny them, especially when a restaurant has so many options. At Little Bohemian, 8 choices stand available: deviled eggs, scallop crudo, lobster tacos, jumbo lump crab cake, crudité, tuna crispy rice cake, tenderloin samosa, and bread service. Salads include the Boho Caesar, seasonal fruit burrata, and the Little Bohemian Garden, all available with additional chicken or shrimp. For entrees, Wagyu short ribs, $44, sea scallops, $45, red fish, $40, braised lamb shank, $42, and French roasted chicken, $35, make the bill. Steak options include a main filet mignon, 10 ounces, for $60, petite filet mignon, 8 ounces, $52, tomahawk, 38 ounces, $150, and cowboy ribeye, 22 ounces, $85. Additional toppings for an additional charge range from sauces: Texas Ranger demi-glace, Boho Béarnaise chimichurri, compound butters, truffle, etc., and surfs. 4 dessert options end the night. Cold sips. Divided into 4 sections: Boho signatures, frozen drinks, classics, and house shots. The cocktail menu ranges from refreshing, light creations such as Oasis in the Desert, ranch gin, watermelon, guava, ginger, and lime, to sweet treats like the lychee martini, enchanted rock vodka, yuzu liqueur, sake vermouth, lychee, lemon essence. Other libations include Due West bourbon, Desperado tequila, Sour Flowers gin, For Everything Good and Bad, sweet vermouth spiced pear liqueur, Cold Set Martini, vodka or gin, Frozen White Russian, Frozen Salty Dog, Tommy's Margarita, Mai Tai, rum, American Trilogy, rye, Bramble, gin, and Regal Gold Rush, bourbon. Shots include 1 tequila and 1 vodka-based shot, topped with an array of flavors, spices, and garnishes. Overall vibes. Carrasco and her team stood true to her Vegas-Miami-LA inspired swanky vibe, filling the corner lot with dark velvet sitting space, gold accents, and French decor. Another great chance for a local business to expand tall city palates, Little Bohemian will hopefully establish a spot in the downtown dining scene of Midland, with its unique style choices and aura, before Hotel Santa Rita joins the block. In line with Carrasco's vision, the restaurant will surely bring out a swarm of Instagram photos packed with elegant dishes, creative outfits, and happy, smiling faces. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, May 17th. Raymond G. Chuck Luckett. Raymond G. Chuck Luckett of Midland passed away Thursday, May 11th. A memorial service will be held at Kelview Heights Baptist Church at 10 a.m. Friday, May 19th. Chuck was born August 2, 1945, in San Jose, California, to Bud and Earlene Luckett. He is survived by his wife Sherry of 54 years, daughter Bonnie Gilmore and husband Mike, as well as 2 grandchildren and 1 great-grandson to come. one sister, June Strassener, and husband Paul. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickelin Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Tomas Marquez Flores. Tomas Marquez Flores was born on December 21, 1940, in El Mulato, Chihuahua, Mexico, to Dominga and Malaquias Flores. Tomas was blessed with five children, Sylvia and spouse Juan, Thomas II and spouse Yossi, James and spouse Tutti, Jason and spouse Angela, and Eileen, deceased. 11 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. In 1965, he married the love of his life, Gloria, who stood by his side until the day of his passing. The family will receive friends from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, May 19th, at the Branch at Nellie Pickelin Welch Funeral Home. A funeral service will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday, May 20th, at First Methodist Church Sanctuary in Midland. Burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Librada Lujan. Librada Lujan, 92, of Midland, passed away on Monday, May 15th. Public visitation will be Thursday, May 18th, from 9:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, May 19th at 1 p.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Hi, this is Pepper reading articles from the Odessa American. Wartime Photos on Display by Odessa American, May 16, 2023. Midland. Arts Council of Midland announces an exciting exhibition and reception opening from 5:30 to 7 p.m. May 18 of the photography of Magdalena Beytog from Krakow, Poland. Beytog has been making her art for decades, and her work includes interesting and exciting figurative images from her native Poland. Another compelling part of her exhibition includes several images from the Poland-Ukraine border at the start of the war against Ukraine. Photos of what she saw are included in this exhibition. Beytog and her husband Peter were instrumental in helping Ukrainian refugees escape at the Ukraine-Poland border and then drove them into Poland to safety. 12 of the 37 works in the exhibition are photographs taken at the Ukraine border, a news release said. Peter Beytog, prior to the war against Ukraine, was and remains a mountain guide. He has his own business for tourists in Poland. Magdalena Beytog is unable to be at the reception but has made a short video that will play during the reception. The 37 photographs in the exhibit include the ones from the Ukraine border, as mentioned, black and white figurative photographs with intriguing characterizations. 9 photos using a double print. The first layer is printed on glass and the second inner layer is printed on paper, giving a three-dimensional effect. And finally, figurative color photographs with native costumes highlighted in the imagery. Tony Says, Is Telehealth Available on Medicare? By Tony King, May 17, 2023. Tony, my 86-year-old mother with Alzheimer's needs 24-hour care and lives in a personal care home. She is enrolled in a Medicare Advantage HMO, and taking her to the doctor is quite an ordeal. Friends have suggested that I disenroll my mother from this HMO and return her to Medicare and use telehealth, which has become popular since the pandemic made medical changes. Financially, it is costing over $4,000 for her personal care home, and she does not qualify for a Medicare supplement due to Alzheimer's because I have tried. How do I find a doctor that uses telehealth or makes house calls like in the old days? Is this something that Medicare or Medicare Advantage plan will pay for? Thanks. Victoria, Lake Charles, Louisiana. Hi, Victoria. I have good news for you because the Dr. Welby days are back to stay since the pandemic for those on original Medicare or Medicare Advantage plans. Social distancing has caused telehealth, also known as telemedicine, to remain popular in 2023. At-home doctor visits via the computer or other device are reducing the number of ER visits for patients who cannot get to the doctor's office for a face-to-face meeting. A telehealth or house call can help prevent a minor ailment from turning into a major healthcare issue while keeping a frail senior out of the hospital and healthy. Medical doctors are not the only ones making telehealth or house call visits. So are dentists and eye doctors. Even technicians with mobile X-ray, ultrasound, and other medical diagnostic machines will come to homes, assisted living facilities, personal care homes, and nursing homes. My advice to you, Victoria, and to Tony Says readers, is to ask your elderly family member's primary care doctor or specific health care provider which telehealth provider their office is contracted with, regardless of whether he or she has original Medicare, with or without a Medicare supplement, a Medicare Advantage plan, or a retiree group medical plan. Original Medicare and Original Medicare with a supplement will pay for house calls or telemedicine services. Medicare Advantage plans will also pay for these services, provided the service is in the Medicare Advantage plans network. House call doctors are generally board certified, and the providers consist of doctors, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners. The patient does not have to be homebound to qualify. The house call doctor can schedule regular appointments, especially if the patient has a chronic illness, or you can schedule appointments as needed. Victoria, you are wise to look at all your mother's options regarding disenrolling from her Medicare Advantage plan with her serious health situation. Many do not realize that they must qualify medically to be approved for a Medicare supplement, which helps pay for what Medicare will not pay. If one is not approved medically, then they will pay out of their pocket. It is vitally important to consider all Medicare plan options because no one knows when their health will begin to deteriorate and they discover they can no longer change their Medicare plan. Chapter 2 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains Medicare Parts A and B, which can help avoid problems like Victoria is experiencing with her mother. Remember, with Medicare, what you don't know will hurt you. Need Medicare help? Then call the Tony Says Medicare hotline at 832-519-8664 or email info@tonysays.com for Medicare help. Tony's book, Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition, is offering a $10 discount available to the Tony Says readers and their friends at tonysays.com and seniorresource.com. Visit seniorresource.com/Medicare-moments to listen to Tony's Medicare Moments podcasts. OPD Chief Testifies in Washington on Fentanyl, Other Challenges by Kim Smith, May 16, 2023. Odessa Police Chief Michael Girk was one of several law enforcement officers who testified Tuesday before the Homeland Security, Counterterrorism, Law Enforcement, and Intelligence Subcommittee, chaired by Representative August Pfluger, Republican, Texas. The purpose of the meeting was to talk about the state of law enforcement and its relationship with Homeland Security. Girk, whose appearance in Washington, D.C. coincided with National Police Week, appeared on the panel with Orange County Sheriff Don Barnes, Boston Police Department Commissioner Michael Cox, and Rafael Mangual, a senior fellow and head of research for policing and public safety at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research. Pfluger noted 246 law enforcement officers died in the line of duty in the United States last year, and so far this year, 41 have died. According to the Officer Down Memorial page, 60 officers were killed by gunfire, 36 died in crashes, 14 died as a result of a vehicular assault, another 82 died of COVID-19. Texas lost 35 officers last year. I think we've forgotten what it means to support our men and women in law enforcement who service our communities every day, Pfluger said in his introductory remarks. He also said the U.S. has forgotten the importance of holding people accountable for their actions and bemoaned the influx of fentanyl and other drugs into the U.S., zero bail policies, reduced sentences, budget cuts, and media bias. While the Department of Homeland Security and state and local law enforcement agencies have made significant progress in sharing information since the September 11 attacks, Pfluger said more can be done to improve communications. I worry that there continue to be gaps in how we share information in a consistent and timely manner. We have to work together to overcome these barriers, as information sharing is critical to combat the wide variety of threats that we face today, Pfluger said. Representative Seth Magaziner, Democrat, Rhode Island, also said strong collaboration at all levels of law enforcement can help prevent crime, but he said gun safety laws need to be strengthened. We must continue to fight for common sense gun safety laws so that neighborhoods are safe from gun violence and police officers are never outgunned. In the last several years, 504 police officers were killed on duty in the United States, and of those, 456 officers were fatally shot with a gun, meaning that 90% of line-of-duty deaths were perpetrated with a gun, Magaziner said. This gun violence epidemic has only become worse in recent years. From 2020 to 2021, the number of police officers fatally shot rose 35%, and it should be no surprise that these increasing occurrences of preventable officer deaths are three times more likely to occur in states with weak gun laws. He noted Rhode Island has lower levels of gun violence than many other states and attributed that to background checks, red flag laws, and ghost gun and high-capacity magazine bans. Girk told the committee he believes Odessa has seen a reduction in violent crimes thanks to a partnership with the U.S. Attorney's Office and prioritized the prosecution of convicted felons, drug dealers, and gang members who are caught with firearms. This led not only to a reduction in violent crime in the area, but also reduction in property crimes such as auto thefts and burglaries, Girk said. This is a shining example of what partnerships between local and federal authorities can accomplish. The biggest problem facing Odessa now is fentanyl, Girk said. People as young as 12 have overdosed on the drug, which is coming up from China through Mexico. Pfluger pointed out fentanyl-related deaths in Texas have increased 500% since 2019, and he asked Girk what the greatest challenge is when it comes to the trafficking of fentanyl. Really, that's easy. It's keeping it from my community. Once they, the drugs, get in the community, it is very difficult to root them out, Girk said. It's heartbreaking to see that a lot of these fentanyl overdoses and deaths are concentrated on young people. Asked by Pfluger about open borders, Girk noted there's just a sea of narcotics coming into the U.S. and includes more than fentanyl. Methamphetamine is the predominant drug in Odessa, he said. Girk also spoke about other challenges Odessa faces, including staffing shortages within OPD and a lack of mental health services. OPD is budgeted for 181 sworn positions and has 38 open slots currently, Girk said. The oilfield industry pays better, and attitudes toward law enforcement have changed over the years, he said. Everyone has open positions because they see the danger involved in policing. It's broadcast constantly. Law enforcement officials have also done some very bad things in the recent past, and those things are getting attributed to every police officer, every sheriff's deputy in the United States, which is absolutely a false statement, Girk said. I will absolutely say that no one wants to get rid of a police officer, a bad deputy, more than a good police officer or a good deputy. So I think that those things absolutely impact us numbers-wise, and when you don't have numbers, it affects your ability to do your job. On Thursday, the Odessa and Midland Police Departments will hold the 2022-2023 Texas Memorial Service to honor fallen officers for their ultimate sacrifice. The event begins at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home, 6801 East Highway 80. Among those being honored are Ector County Sheriff's Office Deputy Thad West, OPD Corporal Gordon Toll, OPD Officer Scott Smith, OPD Corporal Arlie Jones, OPD Corporal Scott Gardner, OPD Corporal Abel Marquez, Ector County Independent School District Officer Robert Joyner, and ECSO K-9 Casey. House advances bill that could provide billions of dollars for new water projects. By Aaron Douglas, The Texas Tribune, May 16, 2023. A new fund to jumpstart massive water supply projects and fix aging water infrastructure across the state would be created under legislation that received preliminary approval from the Texas House on Tuesday in a vote of 139-1. The fund could get between $1 billion and $3 billion to start, early draft budgets from the House and the Senate indicate. Senate Bill 28, which passed the Senate in early April, would create a special Texas water fund that the Texas Water Development Board, the state water agency that often acts as a large bank for financing water projects, could use for water supply projects and upgrades to existing water infrastructure. It would also create the New Water Supply for Texas Fund with a mission to create 7 million acre-feet of water in Texas over the next 10 years, an amount that's more than four times what Lake Livingston, one of the state's largest reservoirs, can hold. At some point, what gets the needle moving on big projects and what brings people to the table with solutions is real cash, Senator Charles Perry, Republican Lubbock, said in an interview with the Texas Tribune. The state has a role to lead, to push, and to provide a clear direction that we're serious. Climate change has brought higher temperatures that accelerate evaporation rates from reservoirs and dry soil more quickly, meaning less water flows into rivers and streams. At the same time, rising temperatures and warmer oceans, which increase the amount of water in the air, increase the risk of extreme rainfall events in Texas. The state could see 30% to 50% more extreme rain events by 2036 compared with 1950 to 99, the state climatologists found. Significant flooding and extreme rain events are more frequently following droughts, according to the Fourth National Climate Assessment. The bill, authored by Perry, would limit money from the New Water Supply for Texas Fund to a handful of ideas, including funding marine and brackish water desalination plants and acquiring water from other states. The House added aquifer storage, potable reuse projects, or treating wastewater for drinking water, and water loss mitigation projects to that list, one of the differences between the two chambers' versions of the bill that will have to be resolved before it can be finalized and sent to the governor. But those projects would not need to be included in Texas' statewide water supply plan, which anticipates and plans for the state's water needs over a 50-year time horizon in order to access the new water supply money, a major departure from previous water planning. Typically, water supply projects are financed through the State Water Implementation Fund for Texas, or SWIFT, which issues bonds to private low-cost loans. Projects must be included in the state's water plan in order to receive funding. Some groups have raised concerns that the new fund would operate outside of Texas' typical process, potentially leading to less oversight and planning. I just don't think it makes sense to exempt investments in water supplies from strategies in the state water plan, said Jennifer Walker, director of the Texas Coast and Water Program at the National Wildlife Federation. She argued that it will require time, money, and resources from the agency to create a new process rather than working within an existing one that is already functioning quite well. But Perry countered that while SWIFT is a good program, it hasn't delivered the kind of massive billion-dollar projects he thinks the state needs to pursue more aggressively. Texas' existing water supply plan relies heavily on building new reservoirs, an idea Perry has criticized in the past for moving too slowly or being unrealistic. Perry's vision is that the money would be used to help kick off a handful of ambitious billion-dollar water projects that could provide water for multiple regions of the state. I'm not looking for plans, Perry said. I'm looking for action. While Perry in the Senate is bullish on large water supply projects, State Representative Tracy King, Democrat, Batesville, who sponsored the bill in the House, is concerned about deteriorating water infrastructure across the state, particularly in small and rural communities. King said that while SWIFT works well, many communities, especially small and low-income communities, aren't able to navigate the complex obligation processes that require significant money and resources to compete for the low-cost loans. As a result, rural areas receive only a fraction of a percent of the bonds for state water supply projects, a state report showed last year. Meanwhile, their old infrastructure leaks water, which hurts the state's overall water supply. Texas lost about 136 billion gallons of water in 2020 and 132 billion gallons of water in 2021, roughly the capacity of Lake Conroe, according to data submitted by public water suppliers to the TWDB. It's my hope that's what most of the funds will be for, King said. That's my focus. Flexibility is a key goal for water conservation groups and water industry professionals alike. Sarah Kirkle, the Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs for the Texas Water Conservation Association, which represents water professionals, including water districts and authorities and groundwater conservation districts, said that the group is supportive of the potentially large state investment, but has advocated for giving the Water Development Board the largest amount of flexibility possible to address the many problems across the state. Alex Ortiz, a water resources specialist at the Lone Star chapter of the Sierra Club, said that he expects the Texas Water Fund will function as a sort of umbrella from which the agency could have broad discretion to distribute money, although the House version appears to give more of that discretion to the agency than the Senate's version. The state's water needs are going to be much more expensive than what Senate Bill 28 and its companion legislation are proposing to spend. Texas likely needs more than $60 billion to fix its water infrastructure over the next two decades, according to a national survey by the Environmental Protection Agency. As demand for water continues to increase with population growth and supplies dwindle as climate change worsens, Texas could be short between 5 million and 7 million acre feet of water during a statewide drought of record by 2070. No matter where it lands, all of it is just a drop in the bucket compared to what the state's need is, Kirkle said. Lawmakers also are poised to approve Senate Joint Resolution 75 to dedicate the new funds, and the idea will require voter approval. If the proposals are signed into law, the measure will go before Texas voters in the November election. We are in dire need of significant financial investment in water infrastructure and water supply, without which Texas will not continue to prosper, King said on the floor of the House Tuesday. The immediate need addressed by this bill cannot be overstated.
This is the Dear Abby column. Reader gives meatloaf recipe a Western twist. Dear Abby, I have seen you mention in your column your cook booklets of favorite recipes. I hope the meatloaf recipe is included. Years ago, I cut out your meatloaf recipe, and it's been a staple at my house ever since. I did make one significant change. I use ground bison instead of beef. It's healthier and tastes great. Thanks, Abby, for your years of entertaining, wise words. Signed, Nancy M. in Oregon. Dear Nancy, I'm pleased you have enjoyed preparing and eating that meatloaf, and I was intrigued that you substituted bison for beef. I'm pleased to share the recipe again, and yes, it's included in my cookbooklet set. I have made it for years. It makes delicious sandwiches the second day, if there's any left over. The cookbooklet set features recipes for appetizers, soups, salads, vegetable and side dishes, main courses, and delicious desserts, which are my downfall. The set, which also includes tips on entertaining, can be ordered by sending your name and address, plus check or money order for $16 U.S. funds, to Dear Abby Cookbooklet Set, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price. Ingredients: 2 pounds ground beef, 1 cup seasoned Italian breadcrumbs, 1/2 cup finely chopped onion, 1/3 cup ketchup, 1/3 cup water, 1 teaspoon garlic powder, 2 eggs, pepper to taste, salt if desired, 4 strips uncooked bacon if desired. Method: preheat oven to 350 degrees. In a large bowl, combine all ingredients except bacon. Shape into a loaf, place in a 9 by 5 inch pan. Arrange bacon strips on top of meat mixture if desired. Bake for 60 minutes. Serves 6 to 8. By the way, the cookbooklet set also contains a tasty recipe for turkey meatloaf for those who have sworn off red meat, which clearly I haven't. Dear Abby, I started having sex with a married coworker. He cheated on me with other women. When I found out, I told him to tell me he was sorry because I didn't deserve it. He could have just left me alone. He won't apologize. What do I do? I'm really upset about it. He's married, living a single life. Signed, Not the Only One in Georgia. Dear Not the Only One, you knew this co-worker was married, and yet you helped him cheat. Why are you surprised that you are not the only other woman in his life? You are hardly the wronged woman. His wife is. If you want to improve your life, move on and find someone you can have an open and above-board relationship with. You could write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.